So it's June 29th, 2024. Abayagiri. Days and nights are relentlessly passing. They keep passing and passing. The wheel of time keeps rolling on. And it can't be said enough. It's good to have these constant reminders. And those of us who are... So today there's people of various ages in the monastery, from infants up to elderly people. So infants will change to be toddlers and children. Children will grow up to be teenagers and adults. Adults will grow older, and old people will eventually die. So we have every stage of life. We have all these stages of life represented at Abayagiri today. And it's almost a guarantee that 100 years from now, none of us will be alive anymore. Maybe the infant will be. So it's time just keeps passing, and it's worth thinking about, worth recollecting. Why do we recollect this? Because we want to get back to what's important. What are we doing with our lives? How are we using our time? So we have this reflection: days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well am I spending my time? And also just those of us here at Abayagiri, it's always changing. The people here are always changing. And Ajahn Sik will be departing Abayagiri tomorrow evening to return again to Thailand. And we'll be formally taking leave of him before the meal blessing tomorrow, and taking leave, what we call the kol kama, the asking forgiveness, taking leave, paying respects. It's a very lovely ceremony that we do, and it actually stems from Venerable Sariputta, where a monk was complaining that Venerable Sariputta had evil wishes, that he was just didn't really have a very good practice, that he was just drawing close to the Buddha and kind of being able to be close to the Buddha and kind of making just making a show of his practice, and that he didn't really have anything really special. And eventually this monk was conscience stricken and asked forgiveness from Venerable Sariputta. And Venerable Sariputta then said, "I forgive you, and please forgive me if I've actually done anything wrong or unskillful." So this mutual asking of forgiveness, it's a very lovely ceremony. And also, as we go about our day, just looking at the things that happen to us throughout the day. And the Buddha talked about this quality of dukkha, or suffering, that's all pervasive. And it's, if you know, just part of being human and having a human life. And I'm sure all of us at some point have experienced sadness, sorrow. And for a lot of us, this is what pushed us into the practice, wanting to find a way out of suffering, out of sadness, out of sorrow. Or we may have been doing well, and then suddenly it all changed, and what happened? So the Buddha is talking about this, noticing this quality of sadness or suffering that can arise. Or if we're doing okay and we're not really suffering so much, then perhaps there can still be an undercurrent of agitation or disease that goes unaddressed. And sometimes we need to really fall back on these wholesome qualities of appreciation and gratitude for what we have in our lives. That can help to buoy the mind up and we don't want to get too hard on ourselves. We need to learn how to be very forgiving with ourselves. And especially in the West, we seem to be very adept at practicing brutality towards ourselves and actually trying to brutalize our minds into submission. We might have unwholesome, unskillful thoughts and then be horrifically critical of ourselves. And we can get hypersensitized when we come to the practice. I know when I was in Anagarika, I became hypersensitized, and the slightest criticism or the slightest little poke, I would fall apart. And I could, I can say that now that doesn't happen, so I'm going to give myself a pat on the back. That doesn't happen anymore. So when I get poked or criticized, or people say things to me that are, say, critical in nature, then I'm able to reflect on it. Oh yeah, that hurts, that's unpleasant, but I can reflect on it. That's just feeling. That's just feeling. Feeling is something that is, it's part and parcel of being human. So yeah, getting criticized, it can hurt, it's unpleasant, and it's just feeling. I can reflect on it rather than react to it or try to push it away, try to get rid of it, try to counter-criticize the person who's criticizing me, or proliferate a lot about how I need to tell that person how they're not correct in that criticism of me. But rather than do that, just say, oh, that's just unpleasant feeling. That's unpleasant feeling. Just bringing it back to that basic experience. So a lot of the Buddha's teachings, all the Buddha's teachings, are about how to reflect on our experience. They're tools for reflecting on our own experience. So a few of us went on a short tudong recently. I guess it was only a week ago that we got back, and haven't really talked about it so much yet, so I thought I would talk a little bit about that tonight. It was, we were only really on the road for 5 days, walking up to the Humboldt Vihara, and then we were resting up there for a couple days before coming back. And sometimes the practice of walking, of just getting out of the monastery and just walking and living on faith, can be, it is a very important part of our tradition. And because sometimes, even though we are living more austere than your average American person, we have, the food is more austere, the lifestyle in general here in the monastery is more austere than, say, your average layperson. Still, we can get into kind of a cruise control mode and kind of the contemplations can become a bit stale, things can stagnate, we can get stuck in a rut. So it's good to get out on the road, shake things up a bit. And just that practice of walking, doing an extended period of walking meditation. And I know for myself how often I would get up to my kuti and do some walking meditation and then get tired and want to just lie down and take a rest. But then getting out on the road when we have to walk, say we're having the meal and then walking, and walking with gear, maybe about 30 pounds of gear, and finding, oh yeah, I could walk for hours, and that's on the highway with weight, so why can't I do walking meditation in the same way? And then that practice of not knowing where we're going to eat, where we're going to sleep. And sometimes it can put the mind into a more mindful state. And say for myself, leading the walk, wanting to make the right decision, but really sometimes not knowing, am I making the right decision or not? We go this way, we go that way. You know, We're trying to maybe find a spot that I remember from previous walks and feeling that pressure of wanting to get it right and yet really not knowing if I'm making the right decision. So the mind becomes a bit more attuned to conditions, and the mindfulness I find gets more, can get stronger, it can get more refined, and that's a natural result of just looking for the right path when the right path isn't apparent. So what did we do is we walked out of a Biakiri. We walked north on Tomkai Road about 7 miles, camped on a creek, a beautiful creek called Tomkai Creek. And we were carrying glots, that is traditional gear, traditional monk's gear. But then since we walked out of the monastery about 6:15 or so, we didn't really get to our campsite until it was getting dark. And normally you would hang the glot, the monk's umbrella and mosquito net, you'd hang that from a cord that you string from two trees. But then it was getting dark and it's not really apparent where we would string our cords, so there's another way to use the glot. You can just set it on the ground. And you have the handle, which kind of props it up, and use it as like a bivy sack. So you're kind of in your mosquito net like a tube. And it's quite comfortable, actually. Then in the morning time, there was actually frost on the ground. I was not expecting this in June. It was quite cold in the morning. So get up, start walking, start warming up, walking down Canyon Drive, down towards Willits, and then meeting up with some friends in Willits, getting a, there was a meal offering there, and then walking north on Highway 101. And our feet were getting blistered at that point. So going off the highway, there's some old railroad tracks just off the highway. So resting on some railroad tracks, and then actually, before that, we met up with Bita Garman. So they have these people who have done heavy earth work at the monastery since it opened. They've done a lot of the digging work, foundation work in the monastery. Got invited into their workshop. They actually offered us drinks and ice. So Tantra Tapalo was able to ice his feet. His feet were starting to hurt quite a bit. Then we were able to carry the ice with us up to when we took a break on these railroad tracks, and able to ice our feet a bit, take a bit of a rest, keep walking. And then it kind of started to get interesting. It was, we were walking for not too long, and then a young woman stopped in her car and said, "Oh, are you going to Dwayne's place?" Who's Dwayne? Who are you talking about? And said, "Okay, well, now we're they kind of started to, when we met up with these people who have this workshop earlier, they said, "Oh yeah, you can stay at our place. It's up halfway between Willits and Laytonville, so about 10 miles north of where we were at." Said, "Yeah, we're actually going to this place that's across from Shimon's Ridge Road." And she said, "Oh yeah, where are you staying there?" And I said, "We're staying with our friend Heath." And she said, "Oh, you're staying with my dad. All right, okay." So I said, "Okay, I've met this person before, but it was 10 years ago, and I do not recognize you." So yeah, it was, she gave us a ride to her dad's house, where we stayed the second night. And we were able to set up a our tudong cords, our lines, hang our clothes from there. And then the next morning, Kara Heath's wife, she took us to, offered us some breakfast, which was very nice, much appreciated, and took us to up to just before, maybe a mile before Laytonville. And then we started walking again. And then somebody pulled over and wanted to take us up to Avenue of the Giants, quite a ways north. So we were going to be dependent on little rides here and there. We knew we couldn't walk all the way to the Humboldt Vihara just on just with the short amount of time we had. So we almost took this ride, but then Tantra Topala was like, yeah, my feet are really hurting. So we had to do a evacuation, call the monastery van. So we didn't take the ride. We went back to where we were dropped off. Thought, well, you know, if the monastery van's going to come, need to get you back now before we're too far away. So that was so unfortunately, day three, we had to, Tantra Topala had a foot injury. So then it was myself, Tanhemiko, Ben. Yeah, we kept walking, and we were going to go alms round that morning in Laytonville, and I wasn't sure about the alms round because there was this market in Laytonville, that Geiger's market, that had closed, and that would usually on past walks be where we got good alms food. We would stand, we would actually, so according to our precepts, we can't use money, we can't store food, but we would normally stand at a market, and if people saw us and either knew what we were doing or were able to ask us what we're doing, then they would offer us some food for the day. So, but that market was closed, so wasn't really sure what was going to happen. So we got to a Chevron station. Ben wanted to get us some drinks, so he went in, and then a Thai family actually came out, and they were from Eureka. They actually offered us a full meal quite spontaneously. So again, that was pretty amazing and very spontaneous. So then we kept walking north to find a place to eat, and it was middle of the day, getting pretty hot. And so we just thought, well, find a shady spot and sit down, have our meal. As we were walking, you know, before we found this spot to have our meal, noticed there was a highway worker, and he was by himself, and he was doing some sort of work, putting a cord, like a rubber wire, across the road and taking some sort of readings off of it. And I remember just commenting, like, oh yeah, this guy looks like he's taking his work very seriously and look like he's doing a good job. And so we walked by him, just thought, oh yeah, that's interesting. Like, we didn't wave to him, he didn't wave to us or anything. But then soon after that, we found a place to eat, sat down in a vacant lot with some beautiful big oak trees, and had our meal. And after that, we just kept walking north for pretty much without stopping. I think we walked 11 or 12 miles. We walked for over 3 hours. It was maybe 4 hours. We just walked. And eventually it was kind of getting on in the day, and I kept thinking, okay, we're going to get to the Eel River at some point, and we're going to have a river, and we'll be able to camp and maybe get in the water and cool off. But my memory was a little bit off about where the Eel River was, so it was much farther than I thought, where Highway 101 actually meets the river. And so I was kind of getting later in the day, I think it was about 5 p.m. or something. And we had sat down, had some water, had some of our drinks that we'd been carrying. And then we kept walking. And right when we kept walking, then a car just stopped in the middle of the highway, like in the lane, but like not pulled over really, and just put their hazard lights on. And it seemed this person had definitely stopped for us, but they were just stopped in the middle of the highway and with the hazard lights on. They were go, 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 go. It's this really super dangerous. And so they were just stopped, and luckily no cars came. And then we got up to them as a Thai lady who wanted to talk to us. She said, "Oh, can you go up and pull over there?" And right then a UPS truck was coming. So, "Oh yeah, fine." And then they kept going. And then luckily there wasn't some horrific accident. But then also right when she then went forward, then the highway worker we had seen earlier stopped, and he said, "Hey, I saw you guys earlier. I'm going up to Liggett. I don't know if you're just walking or if you want to ride, but I respect what you guys are doing." And we said, "Yeah, well, maybe you could pull over up where that car is and in front of her, and we're going to talk to her, and then we'll take a ride. We'll take a ride with you." And so we went up, and the Thai woman that we'd seen, she wanted to give us a ride to Garberville, where she was going, but that was probably a little bit too far. So we said, well, we chanted a blessing for her, and she went on her way. And then we talked to this highway worker who we'd seen earlier, and we kind of said, "Oh yeah, we saw you. It seemed like you were doing a really good job." And he's like, "Oh yeah, I saw you guys, and I really respect what you're doing, and I want to just offer a ride or something." So then we got into this vehicle, and we were sitting in the back, so it was just dark, and it kind of felt like we were being transported somewhere. And well, we were being transported somewhere, but like transported maybe in some sort of interdimensional transport. And then I remember commenting to Tan Hemako, "Okay, I wonder if we could maybe, if he's taking us to Liggett, we could go to the Tibetan center there, because maybe we could stay the night there." And he kept driving, and then he stopped, and we got out, and we were at the front gate of this Tibetan center. So he took us to the front gate, and he's like, is here okay? Is this a good spot?" I said, "Yeah, perfect, perfect." So chanted a blessing for him, and chatted for a minute or two, and then went. I was very tired at that point. So we went on into the Tibetan center and sat on the grass for a bit. And then there was this, right when we sat down, there was this big white truck that came up to the front gate. And so we were just sitting, and I was trying to get into contact with the manager of the place who I know. And then this guy gets out of this white truck, and then he's got a package for the teacher there, the Rinpoche, who's there. And then manager comes out, and we kind of start connecting with people, and they invite us to stay. And then they say, "Oh, do you know Dwayne?" "Oh, that's Dwayne. Okay, so..." So we got to meet Dwayne after all, and so all these circumstances came together for this kind of chance meeting. And he's got his late wife was some sort of really high incarnate lama, and they had a chedi in the hills above Laytonville. It's like kind of a private area, but we had been taken there 5 years before on our previous walk. We'd actually been to this chedi, but we'd never met the owner. So now we got to meet the owner, and so that was nice. And we exchanged a few words and shook hands, and then he left, and then we're given a bit of a shown to our dwelling places in the Gombe, the Tibetan center in Willits, or sorry, in Leggett. And so to back up a little bit about this Tibetan center, there's a teacher considered a meditation master named Chokyi Nyima Rinpoche, who's the head of this center, and he visits every August. And during the pandemic period, he didn't visit, but then we had seen him in 2019 and offered him one of these miniature copies of the Buddha Rupa in this hall, like a resin, one of our yellow resin Buddha Rupas. So we had paid respects to him in 2019 and offered him one of these Buddha Rupas. And then we reconnected with him in last year, so 2023, we reconnected and had offered him like a Thai-style Buddha Rupa. And that was when we got to introduce Ajahn Sek to him. So then they were taking, I mentioned that because they were taking us to our dwelling places. And there were fairly new trailer kutis that they'd built. And I was kind of taking notes because we've been building some trailer kutis as well. And they did them really, really well. And they said, oh yeah, we just put Buddha Rupas in these kutis yesterday. And then the kuti they led me to had the yellow Buddha Rupa in it that we had offered. And then the kuti they led Tanhimiko to had the Thai-style Buddha Rupa in it. But there's no way they could have known that we were coming so the day before, somebody had just put these Rupas in these two new kutis. So it was quite nice, just a very moving kind of convergence of some sort of good energy. And it was just, yeah, great to just have a good rest, have a shower, and just have the next day. And Ben got to stay in the kind of ultimate view retreat kuti. The incredible view of the Eel River. And next day we did some, they offered breakfast to us. We did some meditation with their community. They offered a big meal to us. After the meal, one of the older supporters of the community, one of the guys who actually helped start that community, he ended up giving us a ride up to the beginning of the Avenue of the Giants, so we got to hop forward again and got to start walking there on that afternoon. So we walked for quite a while. Then that evening we ended up, I was trying to look for a place where I had stayed previously, but I couldn't quite remember how to get to it, where it was. It was on the edge of the Eel River. And of course it had been 5 years and there's erosion, the landscape changes, trails change, they get overgrown. So I wasn't quite sure where it was. And that was one of these instances where I got us actually a bit lost. And we ended up having to going backwards and then forwards again, eventually it was getting dark, and okay, well, we just got to go to the river here. And then we go to the river, and it was the spot I was looking for. So it was a spot we'd stayed previously. Ended up just laying out in the open. Quite a nice evening, being able to just lay out in the open. Next morning, continuing to walk, going alms around in Myers Flat. Not getting a lot of food, but enough. It was like a loaf of bread, some apples, some bananas, some little sweet kind of wafer type things. So the food was a little bit more austere that day, but still enough. Certainly wasn't nothing. And then continuing to walk, walking, discovered a beautiful spot on the Eel River, no footprints, no signs of humans. Thought we might be able to camp there, but then ended up, we did head shaving there, which that'll have to be another Dhamma talk, another story. That was the head shaving razor I'd brought was quite dull, and it was contemplation of painful sensations for the three of us. I pride myself that I'm very good at shaving other people's heads, and I felt very bad that I caused a lot of pain. But then I also experienced pain, so we were all in it together. So it was a note to bring a sharper razor next time. We kept walking. This was the first time I've experienced walking on the highway at night, so had Hemiko and Ben, they had their lights on, kind of like a red light and a headlamp, just trying to be as safe as possible, and we ended up walking till like 10 p.m., and so our last night on the road, we ended up just finding a spot near the, kind of getting toward the north end of Avenue of the Giants, and actually just, it's like kind of an empty parking lot, just a grassy area, just laying down there, getting up in the morning, having coffees, keep walking, and I was actually thinking somebody was going to stop and give us a ride, but nobody was stopping, and in the end, was getting towards, nobody had stopped, and we certainly weren't in any situation to get a meal, so we ended up, terminating the walk. At that point, I just ended up calling the people at Humboldt Vihara. They came and got us, had some food for us right before the cutoff where we wouldn't be able to eat anymore. But I think the takeaway from this, I think that last day of walking for me, that was a good practice experience, just being able to walk on the highway and kind of thinking, maybe somebody will stop. Okay, there's some truckers, the logging trucks, they seem to be very friendly with us. There's some waves, there's some kind of light honks, not aggressive honks, but seemingly respectful. And people generally being respectful, being nice, but not pulling over and giving us a ride. And so looking at those expectations and then mixed with the tiredness and the heat and the sweat and the discomfort of walking and the pain in the shoulders from carrying gear and the hunger as well. Okay, been walking for a while, getting pretty hungry. Hope we get something to eat today. But then looking at those expectations, and I remember while walking thinking of Lungpur Cha and actually thinking, this is really nothing compared to what those monks experienced in the past in terms of hunger, fatigue, tiredness. These ajahns, like Ajahn Chah, they really, at times, they would really push their students to the point that I've heard one story that with Ajahn Chah, even his students who had the most faith in him, he would push them in ways sometimes that their faith would kind of get shaken. And why is he doing that? Why is he asking us to do that? This just seems needlessly difficult, too difficult. So that development of just patient endurance, but also being able to look at the unpleasant sensations and just note them as sensations, be able to look at unpleasant feelings and just note it as feeling and not let it overpower the mind, overpower the heart. Yeah. That's really what a lot of these trainings are pointing towards. And then also when it's pleasant, not letting that overpower us as well, just being able to see it and take it as it is. And then just like that, we have these difficulties, these kind of walking on the highway, and then it was just, and then it's over. And then we were up north for a bit, and then we came back to a bike area, and then it's just ordinary again. So the impermanence, you know, these things, the time just keeps rolling on and on like a wheel. So we, even if we experience unpleasantness, it's just so fleeting. You know, when we're in it, it might seem like it's lasting for a while, but then it's so fleeting, and our lives are really like this. And it's kind of sad. It's dukkha. Everything is so fleeting. But then when we see it, when we see it with insight, then the heart can start to loosen its grip on the things it thinks it can hold on to. And then we'll start to experience a sense of coolness and ease. That's really what we're here for, is to experience coolness and ease. All this hard practice that we do, all the precepts and the meditation and developing of insight, this is all so we can come to grips with the impermanent nature of all phenomenon, and the heart can start to be at ease and start to be peaceful. I think that's probably good for this evening for reflection, and I'll leave you with